When she was 18, her father gave her the advice she needed to follow her dreams and become a writer. The next day, he had a heart attack and died in her arms. She did become a writer and a business owner and then a wife and mother. Today, after 13 books, a million of them in print, she's an award-winning syndicated columnist, a radio and TV host, and the owner of two successful companies. And now, Elise is here to help you rebuild your life. Stay tuned. This is gonna be good. This is the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I want to start with absolutely an amazing thing that happened on Thursday and Friday. We had our 14th annual Carathon, which was nothing short of stupendous. It was all to benefit the Aflac Cancer Center and Blood Disorder Service at Children's Health Care of Atlanta, curing cancer in kids, and we raised more money than we've ever raised. $1,604,000 and change. The phones were still ringing as we went off the air, and I announced that total, and it was such a big number, I think Clark couldn't even get it into his brain. He turned to Scott, and he's like, how much did she say? And he heard me, $1,604,000 and change. Thank you, Atlanta. Thank you, Atlanta, and thank you, everybody else who listens online, because the online donations this year were nothing short of amazing. I mean, people were able to get with the app, the WSB Radio app, and there was a click-to-donate button right there. There, you could go online to WSBRadio.com, and you can still do that, by the way. That's still up. And so we saw online donations really zoom ahead this year, which was fantastic, right? That means people are listening from home, listening from work, you know, as they're going about their day, which was amazing. I keep using that word. It's a little overused now, but I have to tell you, it was an amazing thing to watch. And we had more people manning phones than we'd ever had. I tweeted out some photos. I got this wonderful cookie flower from this company that donated a lunch for 70 volunteers. We had all these volunteers who were there answering phones, running around, picking up slips, doing other things. The Aflac Cancer Center sent people, the foundations and people. They were amazing, led by Diane and her team. And we just sat there, and it just was fantastic. And so I just want to say thank you again to everybody, because, you know, without you, this carathon would not be as stupendous as it is. We have raised just so much money. We are changing the paradigm. So the money is one thing. 100% of your donations goes to actually doing the research, helping the doctors, helping the families. Absolutely incredible. But we're changing the numbers. The innovation is happening. This year I heard about how the walls between the silos of research are getting broken down, and doctors are talking to each other. They're sharing research with each other, and it's making innovation go faster. It's speeding up, which you see in all kinds of other places as well. Innovation happening at a faster pace. It's the byproduct of all this technology that's going on. And so to hear these stories and to see the numbers where when we started this 14 years ago, 70-75% of kids were walking out. Today, 80-85%, depending on the type of cancer. Even I think I heard 90% for one type of childhood leukemia. These kids are walking out. They're going home. It's amazing. And a lot of this credit is due to you. We are so blessed in Atlanta to have this center as a resource, as one of the top children's hospitals in the country, and arguably the world. And it's right here for when you need it, and hopefully you never do. Or for when somebody in your family needs it, and hopefully they never do. And we heard incredible stories of kids, some of whom made it, a lot of whom made it, some who didn't. And thank you to all the families for sharing We had a great kid come in when I was hosting with Mark Arum on Thursday night. Amaria and her mother and her grandmother, she was absolutely adorable. She had her, I think today is her 11th birthday. She turns, today she turns 11. And she's great. She's just great. So, thank you for giving. If you still want to make a donation, you can go to WSBRadio.com. We appreciate your time and your care and concern. And happy to talk about this. And, of course, just answer your questions because we're going back to money and real estate, of course. 404-872-0750. Let's go to, we have a call already. Great. Wendy joins me on the line from Marietta. Hi, Wendy.
Hi. How are you today?
You know, I'm great. I'm still in the afterglow of Carathon.
I know. It's doing real well. You guys are doing fantastic.
Thank you. How can I help you this morning?
Okay. As I was explaining, my husband and I both still work, and he's 67, I'm 59. Uh-huh. We're taking in somewhere $900 a week.
Okay.
Not great. He's on Social Security, so logically that's, you know, his. Not his, but we're not going to get taxed on it because of...
Is that,
you know,
part of the $900 a week, or that's an addition?
That's a separate entity.
Okay, great.
I have $50,000 in a CD.
Mm-hmm.
Not a CD, I'm sorry. Credit union. We've just paid off our house this month.
Congratulations. That's
Thank
a big milestone.
That's a big one. We're real happy.
Uh-huh.
The only bill we have outgoing is he just bought a truck.
Okay.
And that's going to, you know, that's taking up $500 a month. I'd like to logically put more money into that to pay it off. I'm probably going to need a new car somewhere within the next year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious about the credit union with all that money and, you know, basic savings.
Okay.
What do you suggest they do with that?
Well, what other money do you guys have? Do you have any retirement savings whatsoever?
Yeah, we have some. We have an IRA. He's got one. I have one. Mine's about $20,000. His is about $50,000.
Okay. And no 401ks from any jobs or anything like that?
Minimal. No, we're both in food and beverage, and unfortunately, they don't do that.
Okay. So, how long are you going to keep working?
As long as I possibly can.
Okay.
And in the same way, you know, both of our healths are good, so.
Okay. So you're still making about $48,000 a year at the moment, right?
Yeah, 48 to 55.
Okay, 48 to 55. Let's just call it 50 because it's round numbers. It's Sunday morning, and who can get, you know, down to the dollars? But then you've got Social Security, and how much is Social Security bringing in?
For him, it's $1,200.
$1,200 a month?
Correct.
Okay, so that's actually kind of a nice chunk of money in addition,
yeah.
Right? Okay, so do you have enough to live on?
Oh, yes.
Okay, and you're putting some money away?
Not as much as I'd like to. Unfortunately, we have a variety of cats, and they take a large chunk.
A variety of cats. Oh, no. How many cats are we talking about?
Oh, let's go 10.
You have 10 cats?
I did rescue for a while, so...
Oh, my goodness. You guys have to... There's a moratorium on cats. No more cats in your house. When you're outnumbered 5-1, that's enough.
So, yeah, that takes a chunk.
Yeah, I would say so. You know, I would hate to see you, you know, replace your retirement with cat, you know, food, but that this seems to be where the path that you're on. Okay, so cats are your hobby and whatever else, but we're not going to, no more cats. So your $50,000 is in cash, and it seems to me that you've got the other money in the IRA. I hope the other two, the 20 for you and the 50 for him, is that fully invested in some sort of?
No, it's in an IRA with a CD.
And those are also
CDs. With a credit union.
Okay. So what you might want to do is take either your 50 or his 50 or your 20.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those chunks of money should actually be invested in a stock fund and a bond fund.
With?
And you can split it up 50-50. I would go with something like Vanguard or Charles Schwab or Fidelity, where their funds are incredibly, incredibly cheap. Index mutual funds. So one would be a stock fund and one would be a bond fund. And you just stick it in there and forget about it for a while because you don't need it.
I do have, as I said, with Edward Jones, we have about $20,000 with them in stocks.
In addition to the other money?
Yeah, in addition to.
Okay, which is good, but...
And then it's forgotten about.
good. Forgetting about this kind of stuff is good. But it's still not balanced enough. You've got lots and lots in cash or cash equivalent, which isn't terrible, but you've got a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
For you, it could be 30 more years.
Oh, Jesus, please.
Well, if your health is good and the cats are fine, who knows? But I'd love to see you take at least one chunk of this money, you know, out of this savings, you know, and you still want to need, you know, leave some in cash. You know,
mm-hmm.
You can leave $25,000 in cash. But take 25 and put it into, split it up between a stock and a bond fund. Just give it some growth so that you've got a little bit more balance.
Okay.
And that's really, I think, what you need. And as long as you're working and, you know, with the house, what does that free up, the house payment?
About $850.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it is. That's why I want to put that towards the car and get the truck and have that paid off.
I think it's a great idea. Just substitute, because you're paying a lot of interest on the car. How long is the car loan?
3 years.
Great. So another $850 a month towards that, and that car loan is going to come down from like 3 years to maybe 2 years or less.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And hopefully you can hold off on getting a new car. I'd love for you to be able to hold off till that truck is paid off. But if not, at some point in time, you can switch over some of that payment so that $450 or $425 is going down to prepay the truck, and then you've got $425 to put towards your new car.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And use that money, but then all the other money is kind of the same, so that what's happening is you're making better use of the cash that you have available, and you're getting all that debt pay down even faster, and then you guys should be in great, in about 2 years you should be in great shape, because you only have one car payment.
Right.
Hopefully it won't be $500 a month, hopefully it'll be less, and you're going to have all of this cash that's freed up, the $850 a month, and that should make things really comfortable for you, and you should be able to put even more money away towards the day when you don't want to keep working.
No, just stay home and take care of the cats.
Yeah, exactly. No more new cats. Repeat after me. No more new cats. No more new cats. No more new cats. Wendy, thank you so much for your call. It's 18 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Starting with yours on WSB.
News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB.
What 25 minutes past the hour. WSBRadio.com 404-872-0750 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elyse Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. John joins me on the line from Cartersville. Hey, John. Welcome. John? Wait, let me try again. John?
Hi, how are you?
There we go. I'm good. How are you? Happy Sunday.
I'm pretty good.
So how can I help?
Well, I was going to see if you have any advice on first-time home buyers. I've been at my job for about a year now.
Uh-huh.
I've got one credit card with a $750 limit on it. I just finished paying off my truck. Make about $2,600 a month, and I'm looking to figure if I can rebuild my credit the best I can and get the highest score possible. That's going to help me down the road.
So what is your credit, your FICO credit score? Do you know?
My last time I looked was about a month ago, and it was 679.
Okay. You're going to have a really hard time building your credit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not building your credit, buying a house right now. Because you need to build your credit up and get to some place, ideally, that you're closer to 720.
Mm-hmm.
But 679 is kind of tough. And you've only had your job a year, and I think with the new rules, you may have some trouble qualifying for conventional financing. You may do a little bit better with FHA financing. Do you have any cash?
I have about $2,000 saved up.
$2,000 saved up. So when do you want to buy something?
Well, I want to look over the next year. I figured building my credit up is going to take the longest part, longer than actually looking for a house.
Sure, it will.
But, you know, I figure within the next year to year and a half to be able to finance a house.
Great. So a couple of things to think about that may help you do it sooner, because you've got a really decent amount of income. What you may want to do is take a look at HUDHomeStore.com. Those are the FHA foreclosures. And start to think about what you could get into, sort of at the lower end. You'd like to find a house for between $50,000 and $75,000, and hopefully your income will continue to go up, so you're going to have a better debt-to-income ratio, and you'll save more money. But at least with an FHA HUD house, you can get in for very little. There are a whole bunch of really good programs, and that'll work even better for you. That was such a strange music interlude. Sorry about that, John. I thought we had gone to commercial break. Anyway, information is what you need. Download a copy of my book, 100 Questions Every First-Time Homebuyer Should Ask, and buy clothes, move in. C-L-O-S-E, not the kind you wear. Buy clothes, move in. You can get the both at Amazon, not too expensive, and they'll walk you through the process of actually buying a house so you know what to expect. And stay tuned to the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours on WSB.
News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
Yeah, y'all know what it is. Katy Perry, Juicy J.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours on WSB. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, thinkglink.com, and follow me on Twitter, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. So I just wanted to, you know, in the midst of the great joy that we had with Carathon on Thursday and Friday, we got the news Friday night that Pete Van Wieren passed away, and he was, you know, I think possibly believed to be one of the finest sports broadcast voices ever. And that's how I think anybody who's been listening to the Braves all these years, I mean, that's how you're going to remember many of their greatest moments. And, you know, just passing along to the family that all of us at WSB, and I know our listeners, miss you, and we're never going to forget you. So in the great joy, we also have great sadness, and just thinking about you. The other thing we were thinking about a lot over Carathon was Captain Herb. This was our first Carathon without Captain Herb, and I have to tell you that, you know, I found myself just wandering around the studio, missing him tremendously, wandering by the traffic center. I had Mark Arum with me. I saw Doug Turnbull for the first time in ages and gave him a big hug. And this sort of stuff, the passage of time. We were looking, Pete Spriggs and I were looking at each other going, how the heck has it been this long? This is my 15th year at WSB, and I've been doing this show for at least 13 years. Crystal Wheeler and I, Crystal is the executive producer of this show, and she sort of runs programming, helps with programming and scheduling everybody. And we're just, you know, you talk about the people who aren't here anymore, Royal, and, oh, God, there's just so many. Anyway, so we're going to add Pete to that list and missing him very, very much. 404-872-0750, 37 minutes past the hour. Ellen joins us on the line from Washington, D.C. Ellen, welcome to the Elise Glink Show. Ellen, you with us? Hello, Ellen.
Oh, yes. Hello.
Oh, there you are. Hello.
Right.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I have a question that I hope will be easy to answer. I refinanced my house about a year and a half ago with the same lender that I had before, Citibank. And out of the blue, I recently received an email from the company that serviced the refinance asking me to sign a form to record the deed of trust, a Washington, D.C. government form.
Did you not?
Out of the blue.
Okay, did you not sign? Okay, so what happened? Tell me more of the story before I ask questions.
Well, you know, we refinanced, signed all the forms that they put in front of us, and thought everything was okay and didn't hear anything at all. And then a year and a half later, you know, got a message and a form to sign that we hadn't signed originally, I guess. But I have no idea what this means or whether it's something that we should have signed originally or...
Well, so the way it works, it sounds like there was a miss on the lender's part. So typically you do have to record the deed of trust, which you know, shows that the mortgage is, I believe this is the form, not looking at your form, but the mortgage is being transferred, the first lien. Now, it's the same company, but it's a different lien. Did you start all over again, like with a 30-year, or did you drop down to a 15-year? Because it sounds like it's a different mortgage program.
It was, you know, we had a 15, and I think we went to a 10 to substantially lower the interest rate. But it was a refinance with Citibank, and I think they have since sold the loan to someone else.
Okay, so this could have been a miss, and it's unclear why it didn't get signed the first time. You should. Do you still have the loan package with all the docs, the original docs you signed? So I would go through those and see if you already recorded, had signed one of these.
I did not. I went through it.
Okay. So this is
a legitimate thing to sign.
Well, it would yes, and you have to make sure what it says on it. So you have to see who's named and if you're named and if the address of the house is right. And then before you sign it and send it back, I assume it came from Citi and you're sending it back to Citi?
It didn't come from Citi. No, it came from the
mortgage servicer. And who's the
refinance?
And who's the servicer? Who is the servicer of the loan?
I'm sorry?
Who is the servicer of the loan?
Yeah, ServiceLink.
ServiceLink. Okay. I don't know who ServiceLink is. So what I would do is on Monday, tomorrow, I would call the number that was given to you when you did the loan originally, and I would ask them if they sent you anything.
Okay.
And then ask what, and try to follow up with your online account and just say, what's going on? And you're going to have to talk to a supervisor and see if they have any record internally that this was sent to you. I mean, what I'm trying to do is protect you from fraud, right?
Right, right. That was my concern.
So, you know, there's, it could be that somebody has stolen your number. What they're trying to do is switch things around. And so it's possible that's the case. It's possible it's not the case. But anyway, it's always smart to verify this stuff. So you're going to call your lender, and you're going to say, what did you send me and why?
Okay.
And then you're going to find out something. So let me just tell you what happened to us, and we got this package yesterday. So we get something from a lender for one of our investment properties, and the lender says, we just noticed that you are actually supposed to go from an interest-only loan to a loan that's actually interest and principal, and that was supposed to happen 3 years ago. Whoops, we blew it, because this loan was, and we got this property 7 years ago. So we blew it. So now we're going to, starting in the, with the October payment, we're going to switch you to principal and interest. And because we've enclosed a check for, you know, whatever amount of extra interest that you overpaid on what you should have been paying, and we're lowering your full-time margin by a third of a percent, and we just, because, so the difference is going to cost us an extra $1,000 a month for this investment property.
Wow.
All of which extra goes to pay down the loan. So it's really going from one pocket to another, but and it's fine for us, right? But this sort of came out of the blue, and they've made a mistake. The lender made a mistake, and there's a piece of paper that we have to sign that says we agree to this, and then we have to send it back. But the lender had made what could have been a terrible error, which is 3 years ago they should have done this. They didn't do it, and now the loan is going up $1,000. And we have to catch up because now we don't have as many years left in the loan.
Right, right.
So it's higher than it would have been, right?
Right.
So for somebody who's on a fixed income, this could be a very difficult thing. And for us, it's going to be fine. So, but this came out of nowhere. So, you know, immediately Sam went back to the loan to start to track back, you know, what we had agreed to and when it was, because we've kind of forgotten about it, right? And so this document came, and it's like, oh, yeah, that was that kind of a loan. We'd forgotten what kind of a loan we signed, because 7 years has passed, and a lot has gone on. So it's always good to double-check, and Sam did call the lender, and they talked about it. And that's why I want you to do the same thing, just to verify they really sent this.
Okay. So in my I just have in front of me all the information from the refinance, and I don't actually see anywhere in the documents where it states who the service provider will be for the refinance. Everything is has just the name Citibank on it.
Okay. So you just want to, again, call to make sure that this is real and that it's a real thing and that it's got all the correct information. And if they Citi really sent this out, then you should be able to see it inside, right? You should.
So Citibank would have the information or
they
not?
They should. They should. If they own the loan, they should know that they've messed something up and sent something out to be signed. I would think so. The other thing
okay,
you can do
this,
is...
came out of the blue from ServiceLink, and we hadn't dealt with them originally.
Right. So, listen, better to be safe than sorry.
Yep. Okay.
All right.
That's very helpful. Thank you so much.
Good. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening to the show. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online, thinkglink.com, and of course, Twitter, @glink, @GLINK. So I got a question from one of our Twitter followers just now, and you can, like I said, you can go online. If you're not following me, you can, and then join this conversation. So this guy, Jay, wants to know, for a 403B investors, what are my thoughts on index fund investing versus target date fund investing? And it's a great question. I'd like to just take a moment and explain what each thing is. So index funds, I love index funds because they're really cheap to own. I moved 98% of my stock market money and Sam's stock market money to investing funds, to index funds a while ago, instead of owning individual companies. And basically it's fully diversified. There's stock funds, there's bond funds, other kinds of index funds. Target date funds are certain things are happening to you at a certain point in time, and for example, our son Alex is going to college this year, so it's 2014. A lot of times 529 plans will say, what year is your child expecting to start to go to college? They'll put it in there, and then the money, or its retirement date, right, whatever it is, and then your money gets more aggressively invested in the beginning when you have further out, and then it gets more and more conservative as you get closer and closer to the time you're going to actually need the cash, right? So they shift it out of, let's say, stocks, more into bonds, more into cash with target date fund investing. So what do I really like? I like target date fund investing, and I think people have done well. And what it does is it automates this process of more aggressive investing to less aggressive investing the closer you get to when you need the money. So I like that because most of us don't know when to pull the trigger. Right? When the going's good and the stock market's up like it is now, you think, oh my God, this is going to last forever. And so you never rebalance. And this redoes the rebalancing for you. But if you look at the stock market, we were down in the 14,000s in February after having a decent sized drop. And now we're at like 16,500. Okay, that's a huge jump from February to July. And there's a lot of talk in the market about how we're going to have a crash. So, you know, this would help you do that. On the other hand, if you know you have 30 years to go or 20 years or some huge amount of time, you're going to ride out this investing cycle. And, excuse me. And so index fund investing is nice, but they're two separate and different things. One of them is you have an end date on it, right? Or something is going to happen and you want to move towards that. And one is, you know, you're just going to invest forever. And so I think it's two different things. You have to decide which way you're going to go. And for a 403B investor, I would probably go more index fund rather than target date. And I would use other cash in my portfolio to balance out that decision. Because I think even if you plan to retire this year and you're 65, you could have another 20 years to go. And you don't want all of your money in cash now, when you've got 20, 25, possibly more years to fund. 48 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK on the Elyse Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time. And let's start with yours on WSB.
News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Elyse Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Ellen, if you're still listening, I did some I looked around and did some research for you online. ServiceLink is actually the national mortgage lender platform for Fidelity National Financial. And they are a publicly traded company. They have been around a long time, and they are currently ranked, according to their website, 523 on Fortune's America's Largest Companies. So they're number 523. So big company, huge title insurance company. I've dealt with Fidelity National. They own Chicago Title and a whole bunch of others. So Chicago Title, Lawyers Title, Commonwealth Title, and apparently they also do a lender platform. So that's good news for you. 404-872-0750, but I still want you to call your lender on Monday morning. All right, let's go back to the phones. RJ joins me on the line. Hey, RJ.
Hi, how are you, Elise?
Good. How are you?
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a two-part question. One, it has to do with my credit report, and the other one is, should I refinance?
All right, well, let's hear the first one first.
Okay. I built my house in 1987. I had A-plus credit all these years, never late. I ended up having to declare bankruptcy about 4 years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And thank you. And but it, as it turned out, I was in the middle of modification for my home. And so I chose to keep my home and my vehicle. And so everything was, you know, the car was paid off and so forth. So now what had happened was with my credit report, with the loan modification, somehow it got mixed up and they put my house into bankruptcy. But I still got my loan modification. So what has happened is that there's a bankruptcy on my credit report, obviously, saying that the loan for my house was in bankruptcy, but it was modified.
Mm-hmm.
So for that reason, you know, and I've never been late since then with my house payment, they're not reporting it. You know, I'm not getting any good out of that on my credit report. So that's one thing. I didn't know if I should, if there's anything I can do to ask them, you know, about reporting it.
Yeah, I'm not sure why they're reporting it, and I'm not sure why you didn't do something about this being included in the bankruptcy right away. What did your bankruptcy attorney say?
She said we did what we were supposed to. It was, you know, you had asked to keep it. That's the way the paperwork was done. So I don't know if it was because there was a mix-up due to the fact that it was in modification or what the situation was.
I have no idea.
Okay.
I don't have any idea why they're not reporting it. And I don't, I mean, if you just got out of bankruptcy, I think your credit score is probably pretty low. What's it at right now?
683.
Yeah.
That was like 4 years ago.
Okay. What I would suggest that you do is go to annualcreditreport.com mm-hmm. and you can pull a copy of your credit history and then you can pull a copy of your credit score for about $9.
Okay.
And you can see where it is. It's not the total, it's not the real score, but it'll give you some sort of an idea.
Yeah.
If you have a Discover credit card, you may be able to just get your regular FICO score. And if not, you can always go to myfico.com and get your FICO score. Although that's not the score that they'll use for houses either, which is, this is
right.
a longer conversation.
I
only have a couple more minutes, so we're going to talk about it. So, you really want your, if your credit score is above 700, 720, you're by now, well on your way back. If it's not, you're not going to be able to refinance, I don't think. So you're going to have to think about sort of where you are. Are you underwater with the house?
I don't think so because I had a lot of sweat equity in it since I built it myself.
Okay. Go ahead, quickly.
I was wanting to find out about the modification terms, what you thought of them.
Well, I don't know what they are. What are they?
Okay. Basically, they took a loan of about $200,000, which was the original amount when I did this.
What's the interest rate?
It varies.
Okay. We're going to commercial break, RJ, so hang on. And when we come back, we'll pick this up. at the end of the news, weather, and traffic, because I think there's more here to this story. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, 12:06 on the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Twitter is at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, or thinkglink.com. If you're interested in the intentional investor, you can use the code BUYNOW, B-U-Y-N-O-W, at thinklinkstore.com. All kinds of cool things to do. Hey, by the way, if you haven't watched my YouTube channel in a while, Expert Real Estate Tips, there's a lot of really cool videos. I think we're over 425 videos up there, maybe even more. A lot of real estate minutes up there, really, really helpful stuff. Okay, 7 minutes past the hour, we are on the phone with RJ. She had gone into bankruptcy, the house, she was keeping the house, but now she was in a modification. Her payments are not getting reported. So, RJ, one of the things that I wanted to ask you that we just didn't have time to do before we left is, have you called your lender and asked them why they're not reporting your payments?
No, I haven't.
So you need to do that. You need to get on the phone and go, hey, how come you guys aren't reporting these payments? And which lender are you using?
Chase.
Chase should be reporting it, even with a modification, even with a HARP refinance. You know, all that stuff is supposed to get recorded. And so you need to ask them why they are not doing it and then go up the food chain till you figure out why they're not doing it and then figure out if there's something they can do to start doing it, especially if you haven't missed any payments.
Right.
You also need to go to annualcreditreport.com, pull a free copy of your credit history, buy the credit score and see where you are. Because if you want to refinance, you're only going to be able to refinance with a decent interest rate if your credit history has improved enough, and if your credit score is now hopefully over 720. And it's interesting, but the best credit scores are now considered to be over 780. In most cases, it's really, really high. Doesn't mean you shouldn't refinance. It just means you won't get the best rate. So we left off where you were telling me you had a $200,000 loan. What is the interest rate they gave you on that?
Okay, well, like I said, it fluctuated, but then it caps off. So basically, they took $60,000 of that and set it aside and said, you never have to pay any interest on this money. And you don't have to do anything with it until you sell the house or, you know, you're ready to pay it off.
Okay, so 60 of the 200, so you're not even paying interest. So now you've got, you're paying interest on $140,000.
Right.
And what is the range of the interest rates?
The first 5 years was 2%.
That's a good deal.
The sixth year went to 3%. The seventh year goes to 4%, and then it caps off at 5% in the eighth year.
Okay. And what year are you in? What year are you in now?
I'm in year 4.
Okay. So you're still at 2%.
Right.
This is a great deal. And it's interest and principal, so you're paying down the principal.
Exactly.
Okay.
And also, on top of that, they're rewarding me with $83 a month towards the principal if I pay on time. So it comes out to, I think, $1,000 a year. So every year I have gotten an extra $1,000 put towards the principal.
This is a fantastic deal.
That's what I thought.
I would not refinance.
Yeah, okay.
So what I would do is, and how do you know they're not reporting you on your credit?
Well, because I did pull my credit score and pull my credit report for two of the credit reporting agencies, and they both, one in particular said, that loan went through bankruptcy, but it has been modified.
Uh-huh.
But yet there's nothing on there saying, you know, you've been 100% on time. And that's what was concerning me, is that I should be getting something for doing that.
Okay, well, I don't know that that's the definitive thing, but you should definitely call.
Okay.
And find out if they are reporting, and if they're not reporting, why they're not reporting. You can
okay.
always file a complaint about that with help to the website. It's a government website, helpwithmybank.com. Helpwithmybank.com. It's
okay.
Sponsored by the OCC. It's the place that you go to file complaints about banks, and then they go and they review them.
Okay.
So those are some things for you to do, and then you can always go to myfico.com and buy your actual FICO score. With a combined credit report from the three credit reporting bureaus, Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion, just to stay on top of it.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
That sounds like great advice. Thank you so much.
You are welcome. Thanks for hanging on. Let me know what happens. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, at Glink on Twitter, at GLINK. Jamie joins me on the line. Hey, Jamie. Jamie, you
hello?
There? Yeah, hello. Welcome to the program.
Well, I had a quick question. I don't have a lot of information because I'm in my car at the moment.
Okay.
I had heard the last caller talking about filing bankruptcy. We had filed a Chapter 7 a few years ago, and we had left our house out of the bankruptcy. And then when we went to go, we started getting all the options to refinance. And in the meantime, our home loan was with Bank of America, and it got changed to Green Tree. They bought out Bank of America. When we contacted Green Tree about, you know, doing one of the refinancing programs, they had told us that because there was never a reaffirmation done by Bank of America, that we technically didn't even own our home. We were just like renters. And that, you know, and then when we called our attorney that did the bankruptcy, he really didn't have an answer for us either.
Okay. And
so,
what is the question that you have for me?
I don't understand about if Bank of America didn't file a reaffirmation, what does that really, I mean, what does that mean? Was there a mistake made? Should I contact them?
What did your bankruptcy attorney say when you said this is what you had been told, that you don't own your house anymore?
Actually, my husband had talked to him. I really don't know. I know my husband didn't get a solution from him other than to, I think he recommended doing a short sale on the house and us basically buying the house again.
That's
under
insane.
A short sale. It really made no sense to me.
You need the attorney to focus on you. Okay? If the attorney has made a mistake, you need that attorney to fix it. And call, you need to both call, make an appointment, go in, talk to the attorney, and say, what has happened here? Now, you can check to see whether you own your house by going online to the Recorder of Deeds and seeing who owns your house. Right? That is the ultimate place to find out. And your bankruptcy was discharged when?
Well, we did a Chapter 7, and so it's been a while back.
Okay. So you make your payments each month, and who are you making payments to?
To Green Tree, but then when we had contacted them about doing their one, because they're constantly sending for refinancing, they were like, well, and when we noticed they didn't report us on our credit report also, they were like, well, because there was never a reaffirmation on file, you're basically just renting your home. You don't own it.
Okay. You have to start with the bankruptcy attorney, and you have to work backwards to understand exactly what happened here.
Mm-hmm.
And if the bankruptcy attorney won't pay attention to you, you'll need a different bankruptcy attorney, and then you can file a complaint with the Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Committee of Georgia for misrepresentation. Okay?
Okay.
So
okay.
I don't know if he's misrepresented you, but not returning your calls, not helping figure this out, not explaining it in a way is a bad sign. So
yeah, I was a little concerned about the recommendation of a short sale on the house.
Well, how could you do a short sale if you don't own the property? That would be the first, like, really? Okay, so you're saying we do own the property. If we own the property, why do we need to do a short sale and buy it back? And anyway, let me tell you, that won't work because the lender would never let you buy back your own short sale.
And the letter is also saying that we don't even own the property because we never had the reaffirmation.
Correct. So this is a bankruptcy issue, and you need to talk to your bankruptcy attorney, and you will have to get tough with your bankruptcy attorney, and then you're going to have to find another bankruptcy attorney. So let me tell you how to find a really smart bankruptcy attorney.
Okay.
There is a, at the either Atlanta Bar Association or the Georgia Bar Association, there is a bankruptcy committee. These are the attorneys in that specialty of bankruptcy. They spend a lot of time. Every month they get together and they you know, they keep up with continuing education and trends in the industry and what's going on. You want to talk to the head of the bankruptcy committee. And you want to say, listen, this is what's happened to me. I need some help. Can you, does any of this thing that I'm telling you make sense? Who do I need to talk to and work with to find out if I actually own my house or if I got screwed out of it? And that person, it will either help you or tell you who can go to help, and then will say to you, yes, your former attorney messed up or didn't mess up. This is what this means. So you need an explanation of where you are and what you have to do to fix this. And hopefully it can be fixed. If it can't be fixed, right, that's a different issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to have, you may be able to take action against the bankruptcy attorney for screwing it up. But I do think you've got a long road ahead, because you have to understand both what happened to you and what you need to do going forward. And I don't think it's going to be really clear and easy up front, and you need to, you're going to have to start working on it to figure that out.
Right. Okay. Okay. Well, I will start there. I appreciate your help.
You're very welcome. Please let me know. Please let me know what happens, and I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that this is going to work out okay for you. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Those are the numbers to call if I could be some help rebuilding your house on the Elyse Klink Show. Rebuilding America one house at a time. Starting with yours on WSB.
News 95.5 and AM 750. WSB.
It's 1225 on the Elyse Klink Show. Rebuilding America one house at a time. Starting with yours. 404-872-0750. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Linda joins me on the line. Hi, Linda.
Apologies. How you doing?
I'm great. What's going on in your world today?
I'm getting ready to buy a house, first-time home buyer. And I want to know, I have like $50,000 saved toward the down payment. My question is...
Okay, wait. Let me just stop you there. You have $50,000 saved. That is more than some house in Atlanta cost.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you.
Okay, my question is, should I put that down payment, should I put that $50,000 down toward the down payment, or wait until I get inside the house and put it toward the principal? And part two is, should I go VA or FHA? And my credit score is perfect.
Okay, so I think you need to read more about buying a house.
Uh-huh.
Just from those two questions.
Okay.
What is the total cost of the house you think you want to buy?
I'm just drawing a scenario. Say it's $150,000. Just a scenario.
Okay. So you have $150,000. The most that you need to, the most that you should put down, you can put down more, of course. But if you put down 20%, that's $30,000.
Uh-huh.
Okay. That still leaves you with $20,000 in the bank. I'm all over that.
Okay.
You'll get a mortgage for $120,000. And because you have this extra cash lying around, you could do a 15-year loan at somewhere below 3.25%.
Uh-huh.
And I am all over that, too.
Okay.
You should put the money down up front, because you pay less in interest and you'll get a lower loan if you do that. And if you need even a lower loan to qualify for that 15-year rate, because the difference, there's a spread between the 15-year and a 30-year, that's even more savings on top of it. So a 15-year loan is going to be cheaper by a significant amount over a 30-year. And if you can have the cash so that you can afford the 15-year loan, that's the way you should go. And in terms of waiting until later, you're better off doing it up front, right? Because the smaller the loan, the less you're going to pay over time anyway. So that's what I think you should do. The other thing is, you don't need an FHA loan. And if you put 20% down, you don't need to have private mortgage insurance, which is ridiculously expensive. So you should go conventional, 15-year loan, and go shopping now, because you're ready to buy a house, Linda.
Okay, so conventional on a 15-year loan and the money down up front.
Yes, you're going to put down 20% at a minimum. You've got the cash. You'll have extra money to decorate a little if you want, or at least make those extra payments. You got money in cash. You're going to go conventional loan. Take a look at my book, 100 Questions Every First-Time Homebuyer Should Ask, and the other book, Buy, Close, Move In. You can buy them both on Amazon for not too much money. Buy those books and read them, because I do think, I stand by what I originally said, you need more information to understand how the process works so that you internalize it, so you start looking for the right kind of a house and make a smart move. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
Make up, go, News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, on Twitter, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. If you're not following me, you're always missing like half the conversation. What we do on Twitter is we really point you to some of the best stuff that's going on the web with regard to personal finance. That may be some things from the Equifax Finance blog, but it may also be things like Max My Interest, which we had founder Gary Zimmerman on a couple of weeks ago, tweeting out that the interest rate on one of the big banks, online banks, is now 0.95%. It's basically the best that you can get anywhere. So you're getting all of that through my Twitter feed, at Glink. So you should follow it and see what we're tweeting about. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Nancy joins me on the line. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Elise. Thank you so much for taking my call.
It's a pleasure. What's going on this Sunday for you?
Well, we've got a problem in the family, and we're trying to figure out the best way to resolve it. Mom and Dad are both, you know, bad off. They're in their late 70s, in fact. Dad just died about a month ago, Parkinson's.
Oh.
And on Memorial Day weekend, we found out that the one of the sitters that we had been using was taking checks out of the back of their checkbooks and out of unused checkbooks and opening up credit cards, using their name. And so the courts, the criminal process is going fine, and the credit card companies were great, but where we're running into problems with is the bank.
Mm-hmm.
So the caretaker got about $28,000.
Of their money?
Right, by writing checks. And that's about a fourth of their savings, so it was quite devastating. And so initially the bank told us that they would make good the money because the handwriting was in no way looking like, you know, their handwritings and different things. And they'd never contacted us. And the bank had itself encouraged us to, you know, that he was not capable of going to the bank. So they were a little bit aware. But so anyway, they're now taking the position that they won't have. They first said, oh, yes, but, and now they're taking the position that because we didn't notify them within 30 days of the theft starting, it actually started in about February.
Mm-hmm.
But like I say, this was out of the backs of checkbooks, and
right.
So we were just not aware. And when the police arrested the caretaker, she had their bank statements in the trunk of her car. So, you know, between, you know, our primary thing when we're over there every day was their care. We weren't worried about, you know, that checking to see how their bank statements. I guess this is the cautionary tale for other folks. But so we don't know how to proceed because, like I say, now the bank has reversed itself and said we should have notified them. We actually notified them. We found out about Memorial Day weekend. By the time we were there Tuesday morning when the banks opened to tell them what was going on.
Okay.
So I'm looking for advice.
So did you get from the bank in writing that they were going to make good on the money?
No.
Okay.
Right.
So that's a little bit of a problem. Have you, for your mom, and I just want to make sure that your dad is now gone, right? That's
right,
what you said?
Right.
So now it's
right.
Your mom. I assume that you have locked down her credit history and she's now got a credit freeze on, correct?
Absolutely, right.
Right, and that's what every parent who has, every kid, and you're obviously an adult, but, you know, every adult who's taking care of an aging or sick relative really should do, which is put a credit freeze on their Social Security number so none of this could ever happen without a phone call. But the bank should have called anyway because they shouldn't have been able to open open up an account without using some sort of picture ID along with the other checks. And so the bank is clearly at fault there. And I think you have to
I may have misrepresented that. The bank, she was writing herself checks on his accounts and signing his name. Something to $1,000 a day at one point.
Okay, and so the bank never asked for ID to withdraw money. So I took my son Alex to the bank yesterday, She said, you know, you don't really have to show us an ID to put money in, but if you want to take money out, we're going to check your ID. So the bank never asked for ID along with these checks?
Not to my knowledge.
So then that is a problem. Okay, so let me stop you, Nancy. That's a problem for the bank.
Right.
Because they're violating the Patriot Act and a few other laws that have gone into effect. And so they've made mistakes. That's where you have to push hard on them. And what I think you need is an attorney who's going to say, and this is a lot of money. And so even if you spend a couple of $100 on the attorney, you have to say to the attorney, I want you to write a very strong letter to this bank. That they violated policies, they allowed a fraud to occur, that it never got flagged, they never asked for ID from this woman, this caretaker, who was clearly not my father, and we want them to make good, as they said they would, on the money, and we want them to do it now.
Okay.
That would be a very good investment. And I get annoyed when this kind of stuff happens, as you can hear in the tone of my voice, because...
Sure.
You know, this bank has violated its own procedures, and to get them to pay up, you're going to have to go back and remind them what their own procedures say they're supposed to do when people come in cashing checks, and why wasn't this caught?
Right. Okay.
And so then they are complicit. They become complicit if they don't, you know, stand by their own procedures. They allowed this to happen by allowing this person to cash a check without asking for ID.
Right.
So that is their, that's on them.
Okay, that's what we felt like, and especially, of course, we were heartsick when they said yes, and then they said no, because, you know, obviously, you know, she's in a wheelchair. I mean, you know, it's far too unbelievable that you would, you know.
Well, you can get pretty nasty with them, so if they, the first thing they'll say is probably no, right? But the next thing that can happen is, you know, you can sue them for violation of their procedures, and then you can sue them for, you know, I'm sure the attorney will come up with a whole bunch of things. They're not going to want this to go to a lawsuit, because if it goes to a lawsuit, then you're going to go public with it. And going public, you're going to call the banks, and this is not going to be pretty for the bank. It's going to bring a lot of bad publicity. Your parents are incredibly sympathetic, and they allowed this to happen by violating their own procedures. They're not going to want that to happen. So now they have to understand you're getting serious by having an attorney write them a demand letter saying, listen, you promised this, live up to it. You made some mistakes here. This happened. These people are suffering. You don't really want this to continue.
Right.
So
is it pretty easy to get a lawyer to write a letter? Because my sister had approached a lawyer who said, well, I'll take your case for $5,000, and we don't really want to waste any of her precious money, you know.
I think you need to find a lawyer who will agree to write a letter. You're going to pay him for his time.
Sure.
And he's going to write a letter. If this turns into a case, you'll engage him.
Okay.
But at the moment, what you're going to do is pay somebody to do this. And if one, you know, there are a lot of lawyers in Georgia.
Right.
Right? So you'll find one who's really good who will help you with this. And that's what you need. You need somebody who's actually probably I'm not sure if you need a litigator or an elder law attorney or a lawyer who specializes in banking law. But you need somebody to be able to help you write this letter because, you know, this isn't right and the attorney isn't supposed to, the bank isn't supposed to cash checks without asking for ID.
Right.
And if I hadn't just, you know, and I knew this is the case when I was taking my son in there, I said, listen, anytime you go to a bank, you have to have a picture ID with you because they're going to ask to see it. And then the teller's like, yep, we're going to definitely ask to see it. Anytime you want to take money out, we want to know who you are.
Right. Well, and see, she signed his name to the check, you know, but surely don't they have a signature card on him? I mean, it looks like nothing like his signature.
It doesn't really matter because is it a female caretaker?
Uh-huh.
And she doesn't look like, she doesn't have ID that matched his name, right?
Right.
So anybody with a brain who's watching what they're doing is going to go, may I see a picture ID, and then is going to check to make sure that the name on the ID matches the name on the check, and it sounds like that never happened.
Well, like she was writing it out to herself, you know, so she did, would have had her ID.
It,
see, she's writing, you know,
who
she's
signed,
it,
listen, listen,
mm-hmm.
Nancy.
Sure. Uh-huh.
Think about what you just said, right? The check's in your father's name. Your father's
right.
name's at the top. It
right.
doesn't matter. She's writing it to cash and signing
right.
your father's name. She's not your father. And
right.
she's taking cash out of the account every day, and nobody asked for an ID.
Gotcha.
So unless she has an ID that says she's your father with her picture
right.
on it, which
right.
she doesn't,
right.
the bank didn't do its job. Focus on the thing that's really important here.
Right. No, yeah, absolutely. I just want to make sure, because like I say, they've tried to bamboozle us every which way and say it was our fault for not, you know, we should have been reviewing their bank statements and seeing.
And you should have been. And you should have
right.
been. You
right.
should have
right.
been. And you,
of course.
And this is a great, that's the great lesson. But you know what? The moment you found out, you talked to the bank.
Right.
But it was the bank itself that was contributory because they did not follow their own procedures.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you so very much.
You are welcome. Let me know what happens, all right? I know this is going to be a long road for you, but I'm pretty sure you're going to be able to work that out. 404-872-0750. Jane joins me on the line. Hi, Jane.
Hi.
You with me?
I'm with you. I'm just surprised that I figured that was way down the list.
Well, it's your turn now. How can I help you?
Well, I hired a roofer to put a roof on my house, and the roof is fine, but he didn't clean up the job site. And I've had 4 flat tires on 2 cars and a judgment against me because he took it to court because I wouldn't pay him. He never finished the job. I wasn't going to pay him. Anyway, he took it to court. He had an attorney, and the judge, because of the attorney, sided with him. He was like, I'm still picking up nails. This has been quite a few years ago, and I'm still picking up nails.
Okay. How many years ago was this?
Well, it happened in 10. What is it, 4 years ago?
2010, 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you're still picking up nails?
I am.
And when you got a court order to come to court and talk about this, did you hire an attorney to represent you?
No, I couldn't. I put every dime I had in that roof.
Well, you hadn't paid him, so you still had the money you hadn't paid him, right?
No, and I ain't going to pay him. If I die in that house... it'll go to the county, but it won't go to him.
Okay. And so what can I do for you, Jane?
I'd just like to know if there's anything I can do to correct this.
Yeah, you can pay him because you were ordered to pay him. You
That's
were,
not going to happen.
Well, then, you made a classic error, which was when he sued you for
mm-hmm.
not paying, that you represented yourself, and
mm-hmm.
he had actually substantially finished the job. So you could have paid him everything but, let's say, $500 and said, Judge.
Well, I paid him, the estimate was for $6,000. I paid him half.
Okay, but he finished more than half the job, right?
Yeah, technically.
Technically, he did. And so you could have paid him more and said to him, listen, please come back and help me out here. Or you could have done, because there are always nails left over, you could have bought one of those magnet things on a stick and gone around your property for an hour and picked up all the other nails, and that would have been the end of it. But you dug your heels in, and he dug his heels in, and then he sued you, and then instead of going with somebody who could represent you properly in a way that the court could recognize the trouble that you've had, you represented yourself, and you lost. And now... You don't want to pay him. And frankly, I think he deserves most of the money. So you could have paid him another $2,000 and withheld $1,000 or $500. And, you know, you guys are in a stalemate now. So there's nothing I can do to help you. I'm so sorry. I wish there was, Jane. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America, at least trying, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
News 95.5 at AM 750. WSB.
It's 55 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. All right, we've had an explosion on the phone lines because apparently I misheard what our caller was saying. So this is not Jane, but Nancy, who said that her mom and dad, her dad just died last month, but starting in February, a sitter, her parents are both incapacitated physically, was taking checks out of their checkbook, opening up credit cards in their names, and then got caught with the bank statements, but she was able to take $28,000 of their money, which was a quarter of their savings. And the bank told them they'd make good on it because the handwriting wasn't the same, and then the bank has taken back that position. And I said that the bank should because it wasn't asking for a photo ID. And so what Nancy was saying that I just was not hearing for whatever reason is that I thought she said that the caregiver was pretending to be her father and they weren't asking for ID. I think what she's saying, or what everybody else heard her saying, so I must be wrong, is that she was writing out the checks to her, so she was presenting as if somebody had written her the check, but that the signature wasn't even close and nobody ever checked the signature card to see if that was correct. So I don't know that this makes a difference. In terms of what I said, other than they should have, at some point in time, somebody noticed that the account was being drained down to the same person pretty darn quick, and they should have checked the signature card to see if the signature actually matched. And I could see that not happening, actually, even though it's online. I don't know if the signature cards have all been electronicized so that when the teller looks up the account to cash the check, if she sees a copy of the signature of the person who holds it and then would see that it was different. I don't know if that bank does that and if it's trained to do that. But I don't think that this alters my advice. My advice was that Nancy needs to hire an attorney to write a letter to the bank to say, you need to make good on this. You guys made mistakes as well. And we made mistakes, and come to some sort of an agreement. And maybe it'll be some sort of a, well, we'll give you half or not. But most banks require for ID fraud that you file a notice with them within 30 to 60 days after the statement's been mailed, and that they will only accept fraud claims in that specific period of time. But that was done for most of the statements. So I think Nancy still needs to find the right attorney, get negotiating with the bank, and then continue to follow with the criminal court proceedings so that they can get this back in line. But for everybody listening, this is a really common problem. If you have caregivers in your house, you better take every financial piece of information, put it under lock and key, and make sure that it's not accessible. And that goes for your computer as well. No caregiver should ever have access to a family computer. All financial information should be locked with really strong passwords. Our time is up. Thank you so much for listening to the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Go online to thinklink.com. Follow me on Twitter. Get the best information that you can to rebuild your life. I'll talk to you again next week. Have a great one, everybody.